Our second case today is number 07-1968, Stedman against Urban Real Properties Company, Retail Properties Company. Mr. Flaxman.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. This is a Title VII case involving a claim of religious discrimination. What makes this case very unusual is that the parties agree that the decision to discharge Ms. Stedman was made at a meeting where Ms. Stedman was present and the defendant's human relations person was present. And the meeting was tape recorded. And we have a transcript that the parties have agreed is reasonably close to what the tape recording says. It's part of the record. So this is not the usual case where the employer makes a decision, and then the question is, how did the employer come to that decision, or why did the employer make that decision? Here, the meeting started with the employer not having made a decision to fire Ms. Stedman. During the meeting, the employer made that decision. What happened during the meeting to cause the employer to make that decision?
How was that recorded?
I'm sorry, I didn't
how
hear
was that recorded, that meeting? I'm sorry, how was that meeting recorded?
It was surreptitiously.
Is that legal?
Maybe. And the statute of first
it's
not in Wisconsin.
Not in, and it's not in Illinois.
It's it might have been illegal under Illinois law. The statute of limitations has expired. There are a number of exemptions to the Illinois statute, and that if she ever, Ms. Stedman, ever was prosecuted, she could have argued that she came underneath one of those exemptions. But the applicable one that I would have argued if I was defending her was that she had a belief that comments were going to be made during the meeting which would constitute an assault upon her. And under the statute, you're entitled to surreptitiously tape record that kind of conversation. It is, I think, fortunate for Ms. Stedman and her lawyer that the statute is wrong.
Did she make that claim that that's why she...
Excuse me?
Was that the claim she made? She recorded it because she was...
Well, she was never...
Or was she trying to gather evidence? And my question, you know, what do we do if there's a recording that was made surreptitiously in violation of state law? Are we permitted or should we be permitted to rely on anything in that transcript to make a decision in a case like this?
The one case that reached that question is a district court decision decided by the district judge in this case, and her holding was that the tape recording could be used for the federal claim because one party eavesdropping.
It's not against federal law.
Right, so it could be used in the federal claim, but could not be used on the state law claim that was raised in the case that was before the court. And the defendants, I think, read that case and did not make any claim that the surreptitious tape recording could not be used in consideration of the federal claim. And we're here with the tape recording. Now, we're here with the transcript of the tape recording, which is the basis of our claim that what happened at that meeting, the statements made at that meeting, provide circumstantial evidence that religion or lack of religion, atheism, was the basis for the defendant's decision to discharge Ms. Stedman. Nothing was talked about at that meeting other than religion, atheism, and complaints about the way in which Ms. Stedman had been treated. It wasn't about attendance or job performance or excessive sick time or tardiness. It was about the complaints that Ms. Stedman had made about the way she was treated, the way her complaints were processed, and comments that people made to her on the job. A finder of fact should be compelled to find that it was religion that was a significant motivating factor in the employer's decision to fire her. There's nothing else in this record that would plausibly explain in a rational way why the decision maker changed her mind or came to or formulated the decision to fire Ms. Stedman during the meeting. Nothing else there.
Well, the defendant's principal argument is that, you know, because you have acknowledged that the motivation for firing her was not atheism, but rather that they had reached an untenable situation because Stedman was unable to move forward.
Well, I don't think I acknowledge that. I think I acknowledge that's what the defendant said. That's what the defendant's counsel argued. That's what its decision maker said during the meeting. But I think a more plausible reading of the comments that were made during the meeting is that the workforce, we don't want a workforce that's troubled or that's bothered with somebody complaining, rocking the boat about these comments that are going to be made about somebody who's different than everybody else, someone who doesn't believe in God. And we don't want to deal with these complaints. We don't want people complaining to us. We want a harmonious workforce. We want everybody who's the same. We don't want anybody dissenting. And therefore, we're going to get rid of you. We don't think it would be good for you to be here because we can't see how you're happy, and we can't see how anybody else is happy. It's like firing the black employee because all the white employees don't like working with the black employee. It makes them uncomfortable. And that's impermissible, and that's what we believe the evidence in this case showed. I'll like to reserve the rest of my time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Flaxman. We'll hear now from Ms. Jaffe.
May it please the Court. My name is Beth Jaffe, and I'm here on behalf of Defendant Appellee. And I agree with Mr. Flaxman's representation that this is a very unusual case in several respects. Additional ones in addition to the ones that have been brought up with opening argument is that, in fact, Ms. Stedman waived her right to a jury trial. So, in fact, if this case were remanded, the trier of fact would be the very person who issued the decision here, Judge Gottschall. Another very unusual fact is that, in fact, plaintiff admitted each and every statement of fact in Defendant Appellee's Rule 56.1 statement of facts. And to Judge Williams' point, in fact, did admit just what Your Honor pointed out, which was that Ms. Silver concluded during her discussion with plaintiff on February 6 that she simply was unable to accept the fact that the company had determined that there was a difference in perception between the plaintiff, Ms. Stedman, and her co-worker, Ms. Horowitz, and that she was unable to accept the fact that someone had made the complaint about her, was unwilling to put the incident behind her without having Ms. Silver confront her co-worker, Ms. Hodorowicz, with the accusation that she was a liar. And Ms. Silver also said that she was unwilling to do that. That fact is admitted. That is fact number 89. Fact number 90, Ms. Silver felt that she was unable to resolve the past problems to plaintiff's satisfaction, and that because plaintiff was unable to move forward, they had reached an untenable situation, and it was best to sever the relationship between plaintiff and Urban, so plaintiff was terminated. Again, this fact is admitted.
She worked there about 9 or 10 years.
She did.
Was the fact that she was an atheist known from the time she started working, or when did that become knowledge in the workplace?
Well, I would submit that it was well known. In fact, Ms. Stedman began complaining about her atheism, I believe, in 1998. She started working as an employee in 1995, always in a supportive administrative support role. In 1998, she first brought her complaints to light, and those complaints border, quite frankly, on the ridiculous. For instance, in 98, right, her co-worker in 1995 was playing music, religious music, at her carol. Her co-worker asked her what she thought of the music. Plaintiff said it was beautiful. That was the harassment. She brought that up in 1998. Several other incidents. She walked by two workers who mentioned that the church was beautiful. She overheard co-workers talking about their baby, Grace. In fact, with Ms. Hodorowicz, the individual with whom the scuffle eventually arose that led to her termination, Ms. Stedman characterizes several historical problems, the first being that while she was out in a group setting with Ms. Hodorowicz, Ms. Hodorowicz was wearing an emblem on her neck with a picture of Jesus Christ. Somebody asked her what she wore it for, and Ms. Hodorowicz responded, "I wear it to ward off evil spirits." No reference to atheism, no reference to anything. However, plaintiff perceives that as reference to evil spirits being harassment against her atheism. Ms. Hodorowicz, Ms. Stedman, asked Ms. Sidorowicz about or saw a picture of her child. She said, "Your child is beautiful." Ms. Sidorowicz, in response, said, "I thank God every day for her." These are the examples of harassment that Ms. Stedman not only complained about over the course of 7 years, but however, these were known, investigated, et cetera. This brings me to another important aspect.
Let me just stop right yes. there. And then she had very high ratings in terms of job performance during this entire period, correct?
She did have good job ratings. The last ratings we're talking about and were presented with are in 2002. And I remind the court that the Seventh Circuit law is clear that we actually judge performance at the time of the termination decision, not in 2002. That notwithstanding, Ms. Stedman was retained shortly, you'll recall, Ms. Stedman actually made another complaint in October of 2003, where, in fact, within weeks, the company took significant discipline against her supervisor for sending her various emails. After that point, those complaints also involved religious emails. She was retained, although 900 employees were let go. In fact, Ms. Stedman's entire department was let go. She was placed in another position. Quite frankly, what happened in February 2004 is Ms. Stedman, if we can recall the facts here, how this came to light was that another employee complained about Ms. Stedman on January 21st. This incident arose because Ms. Stedman told Ms. Sidorowicz that she no longer had to do a tremendous hundreds of pages of copying a document job, to which Ms. Sidorowicz responded, "God loves me." A discussion ensued. Ms. Sidorowicz felt threatened. She went down and complained. Plaintiff appellant asserts that Urban appellee recognized that that was a lie. That is not, in fact, the testimony. Ms. Silver's deposition testimony does not say that. What it says is that Ms. Sidorowicz said, "I came to you because I thought plaintiff would come down here about me, but let me tell you what happened." They resolved. They had the first discussion. Ms. Stedman, during that meeting, did not talk about that, but only launched into her own ordeals, would not, stood up several times, called Ms. Silver sleazy, told them they were a terrible company, had been doing all these terrible things, was absent for a week thereafter, not disciplined, nothing like that, had another meeting on January 28. Again, Ms. Stedman went into the same behaviors. Nevertheless, at the end of the meeting, it was concluded that Ms. Sidorowicz and Ms. Stedman would move forward in an amicable fashion, that this would be behind them, let's go forward. However, on February 4th, Ms. Stedman wrote a memo saying she refused to move forward. We're talking about nearly 3 weeks, and would not move forward without Ms. Sidorowicz being confronted as a liar. She refused to and clearly showed an inability to move forward. After the February 4 memo, Ms. Silver, Mr. Glickman, and Ms. Sherman all had a discussion with concerns about Ms. Stedman's inability to move forward, to work amicably with her coworker. Importantly, not one of those three individuals suggested that they ever had any discriminatory animus or even said anything discriminatory, even at Ms. Stedman's very low threshold. On February 6th, they had given Ms. Silver the option to terminate during that meeting if she was to conclude that, in fact, Ms. Stedman could not go forward. That is precisely what happened. And this court has specifically sanctioned employers' rational and legitimate reason for terminating an employee because they are not able to get along with their coworkers. Mary versus Dakin decision, Carson versus Bethlehem Steel Corporation, multiple times. So the fact that she wasn't tardy, the fact that her job performance as an administrative assistant was one issue, but why she was terminated is she was miserable, as she said. They could not spend any more time. She would refuse to focus on anything other than herself. The employer is allowed to maintain a productive environment. Ms. Stedman made clear she refused to do that vis-a-vis Ms. Sidorowicz. Thank you. If there are no further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Jaffe. How much time does Mr. Flaxman have? Thank you.
This would be a much different case if the defendant had sometime before the February 6, 2004 discharge meeting made a decision that we're going to terminate Ms. Stedman. And under those circumstances where a decision had been made, then all of the factors that were so eloquently argued before you would be material. But that isn't what happened in this case. That isn't this case. This case, we start out on that meeting on February 4th or 6th of 2004 without a decision having been made to fire Ms. Stedman. During that meeting, the decision was made. We know what was said by Ms. Stedman and by Ms. Silver during that meeting, and the words that were said are enough to present a jury, a finder of fact question, as it's a jury, not a bench, it's a bench trial, as to whether it was atheism or whether it was some other reason. That's our argument. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Flaxman. Indeed, our thanks to both counsel, and the case will be taken under advisement.